Welcome to People You Need to Know on Spark Plug Radio. I'm your host, Spark Plug, publisher of Atlanta's People You Need to Know Business Guide, Metro Atlanta's most beautiful and effective advertising for your small business. We offer the kind of exposure and recognition that many thought was only available for America's high-profile celebrities. Our mission is simple: to unite women business owners for their mutual benefit and generate a new level of excitement for what they do. We're so honored to lead the way in shining the spotlight on women business owners. Save the date. On Saturday, August 17, 2019, we'll be hosting our Women Working Together Business Expo at the incredible Riverside Epicenter from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. right here in Atlanta. Stay tuned for more information or call us at 770-460-5995. Vendor space is still available. In today's segment, we're going to be speaking with Ms. Elizabeth Peeble about three essential parts of a tax-exempt nonprofit and how they operate together. Our guest today attended Seminole Community College in Orlando, Florida, where she received her associate's degree in liberal arts. She then went on to the University of Central Florida, where she obtained a bachelor's degree in legal studies and a master's degree in public administration. Today, she is the CEO of UR Life LLC. She's a mother, an entrepreneur, and as a community advocate, she is fully equipped to provide a wide range of products and resources that will help you turn your potential into a fully realized vision with a comprehensive plan of action. We're so very honored to have on the phone today a woman who is known for inspiring young minds to think big, Ms. Elizabeth Peeble. Welcome to Spark Plug Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Spark Plug. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and I'm trying to get better. How are you down there in sunny Orlando this morning?
I'm doing well. The sun is shining, and I couldn't be better.
We know you are extremely busy, so I want to get right into it. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Elizabeth, tell us, what exactly is a nonprofit organization or a 501c3?
So a nonprofit organization is pretty much an organization that's here doing work within the communities. They are charitable organizations that are providing services. Sometimes they provide products. Right now it's summertime here in Orlando, and a lot of our youth are going to summer camps. Well, 90% of those summer camps are run by nonprofit charitable organizations. So when you think about what a nonprofit organization is, it's an organization that is formed with a mission and a vision or a goal to do great work in the community, whether it's helping youth, whether it's being a safe haven, whether it's helping adults get back on their feet or providing daycare or summer care for families. There's various ways to start nonprofits and various topics that you can cover, but it's basically an organization that comes together to help the community become better. And so
Beautiful. With
it being 501 tax exempt, that means the tax exemption portion of it means that they can also collect funding to further their organization with helping the community. So that's the tax exemption part. That's the important part. Everyone needs to always understand that that's what that tax exemption does for your organization.
All right. We're going to talk about funding a little bit later. So why does a nonprofit organization need board members?
Board members are essential to a nonprofit organization. They are essentially the core of every organization. So when you see organizations and you see them out in the community doing what they're doing or helping out people, or you see they're putting on community events, a lot of that was brought to fruition through the board members. So the board members are the ones that sit down and assess the organization. They decide what direction the organization is going to go in. They decide what funding areas they want to reach out for. They decide what events and community involvement that they're going to have. And they literally plan that out, like a strategic plan. And so with the board members doing all of that, it makes it easier for those that are, whether they're staff or volunteers that work in the organization, it makes it easier for them to know what they need to do. So members essentially are the ones that decide what the organization will and won't do, where they will and won't be, you know. So they're kind of like the guiding light for the organization as a whole. They're kind of like, if you would look at a pyramid, they would be like, what's on top? You know, everybody, they're the ones that decide what happens, and then it kind of trickles down, a domino effect down into the rest of the organization. So without the board members, the organization kind of loses that core, and that's very important for the organization.
How many members should a board consist of?
The membership can vary on, you know, depending on the state that you're in. For instance, for Florida, since that's where I'm located momentarily, in Florida, we have to have at least 3 board members in order to actually have a board, to be recognized as a board in the state of Florida. You have to have at least 3 members that are operating with this organization. And that's just the limit, that's the minimum amount that you have. The maximum, there is no max. You can have as many board members as you like. However, I always advise or let people know that if you have more board members than you have clients, then something's off balance. You know, because you have too many people running an operation, but not enough people benefiting from the operation. So, you know, if you're just starting out and you are new to the community, maybe 5 years and under, still kind of getting your feet wet, still building your foundation, I would suggest 3 to 5 board members for your organization, just because it's easier to manage at that point in time. And if you ever grow bigger than that, as you grow, you have the opportunity to add more board members as necessary.
You kind of answered this question already, but you can elaborate a little bit more if you like. What is the main function of the board?
So the main function of the board, and I'll elaborate on what I can kind of add some more. They are the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth. They are the part, they are that brings everything together. So they are every facet of the organization. And so it's kind of like taking somebody from each group and coming together. And when they come together, they sit down and decide, well, you know, hey, I'm over the volunteers, and these are some of the things that we see going on. And somebody else will say, hey, I'm over the staff, and this is some of the stuff we see going on. And somebody who's handling community events will jump in and give their information. So the board, the main function of the board is to basically come together and assess the organization as a whole, kind of like checking your temperature. Are we hot? Are we cold? Are we doing what we said we needed to do? Are we going down the same direction that we originally outlined? Have we gone off the path? Have we this? Have we that? So they kind of get together. You know, all the different parts of the organization come together, and they discuss what is going on in the organization. And from that, they then create a strategic plan to take the organization in the direction that they all agree that the organization needs to go in. So the main functions of the board, you can almost number planning, assessment, development, and also supervisor. And I say supervisor in a respect that, like I said, you have a board member that each has their own department that they're working with. So they become that top person that kind of makes sure the staff or volunteers in that area are doing, are actually doing the plan as it was laid out. You know, and making sure that if there's any problems, someone's right there on hand to handle it, if there's anything like that. So that's why I also add in the supervisory part to it as well.
Give out those 4 again, because your phone kind of faded out, please.
Oh, I apologize. Assessment, strategic planning, development, and supervisor.
Well, whatever you just did, keep it right there, because you're coming through loud and clear. And I know you have a bunch of important stuff to share with our listening audience, and I don't want them to miss a word, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. So why do nonprofit organizations need volunteers?
That's a really good question. So most organizations are volunteer-based, and so volunteers are people that come and they donate their time to work with the organization. So volunteers mostly are not paid. They are donating their time, and normally volunteers have some type of connection with the mission of your organization. So it's really important that when you are adding volunteers to your organization, that they understand what the mission and the vision of your organization is, and that it's also something that they feel passionate about as well. And we want to make sure that they have that passion, because if not, then they're not really going to work to their maximum capacity within your organization. So with volunteers, with a volunteer-based organization, their volunteers are very essential to them. So when we look at organizations that are doing community events, 9 times out of 10, those people that are working those events are volunteers. So they really help the organization carry out what their mission and their vision is. because if not, it would be the board members. And we all know we can't duplicate ourselves. We can't do six things at one time. So we have those volunteers that step in that we can delegate tasks and duties to in order to have things run smoothly. We also have volunteers, like I mentioned before, like with summer programs. A lot of the people that work on the summer programs are volunteers. Some of them, they're donating their time because they feel that working with these kids and providing a safe haven for them for the summertime is important. That's a part of their passion. So they go out and they volunteer at different organizations for the summer and they work with the kids. So volunteers become essential to the organization because they help the organization carry out its mission and its vision on the community level. They're not necessarily making decisions for the organization, but they are carrying out the decisions of the organization.
So how does an organization find volunteers?
Finding volunteers can get tricky because finding someone who has a passion for what your organization does can sometimes be harder than it sounds. Everyone, like, and I'll continue to use summer camps, like I said, since we're in the summer, and it's a hot topic right now, for I know for a lot of parents. Some people love to work with youth but don't want to give all their time. When you're going out to find volunteers for your organization, you can look at people that your organization immediately impacts. Because if you're providing me a benefit, I want to also be able to help as well. So a lot of times you'll find community members that will get involved. You'll find clientele that will go from being clientele to being volunteers. So every person you come in contact with can be a potential volunteer. You may meet someone on the street, get in conversation with them, and they may, just through that conversation, you may find out that they have a passion similar to what your organization does. Well, that's the type of person you may want to have come on to your volunteer staff and work with your organization. And so with that, I'll also say, and this also comes down from the board, so I'm kind of showing how some of that connection works, the board will put together their strategy for obtaining volunteers. So they'll say, okay, we need volunteers for this part of our organization and that part of our organization. So we're going to look at local churches because we want someone that has a religious background to be able to talk to our youth about X, Y, and Z. Or they may say, you know, we want to look at someone that's in the legal field because let's just say our organization is centered around youth knowing their rights. So it's important that you look for volunteers that are already doing what it is you need them to do because then you already know they have a passion for it. And you're not going to have to pull it out of them because they're already doing it, okay? So with the board putting those strategies in place, it makes it easier for, like, your volunteer manager to be able to go into different arenas and choose who they want to come on as a volunteer. Now, of course, we understand we can't make someone volunteer, you know, but you can ask. And, you know, sometimes people don't know that they want to volunteer until they're presented with the opportunity. So I always tell people, when you're looking and seeking out volunteers, be watchful. Observe first. Go into the places where people would be that you want on your volunteer staff. Like I said, if you're looking for someone with a religious background, you may want to start attending churches or events that are centered around churches just because you know that that's where those people will be. If you want someone with a legal background, you may want to start calling attorneys' offices or seeing if there's any community events that you can attend as a civilian, so to speak, to meet some of these people that are in that field. Once the board outlines the types of volunteers they need, then it makes it easier to go and choose the types of volunteers you need.
Well, let's change gears here a little bit and talk about a topic everybody's interested in. That's money. Okay. So where can organizations find funding?
Funding is definitely a topic, a major topic for organizations because funding is always at the forefront. A lot of people understand that they need that funding in order to further their organization. So I'll run through a couple. We'll start with grants because that's the one people know the most about. So grants are available. Grants are not always easy to get. Grants are not guaranteed. Grants are yearly most times to where you have to reapply to continue to receive that grant. And then there are grant writers. When seeking out grants, one of the biggest things you need to do is do your research. Does the person or the organization that's giving the money, does your organization align with what they're asking for? a lot of people want to apply for grants, but they don't realize they don't meet the basic requirements for that particular grant. And they spend a lot of time applying for something that they're not going to get. So I always encourage people to do the research first. Find out who's giving the grant. Find out what their mission is. Find out what their goals and what their values are. And then see if that aligns with what you are doing. And I always tell people also, don't just look at the big grants. Don't look at the ones that are $50,000, $100,000. Yes, we all know you need that much money, but sometimes you can get a few smaller grants that will add up to that one big grant because you're more eligible for those smaller grants than that one big grant. Another way that you can look at funding is your local community. Those that you are in the community servicing, sometimes they will make the donation. Sometimes they will come back and help. And so don't cut them short. Don't be scared to ask them because they understand that if you're in the community and you're doing what it is you say you're going to do, and they see it being done, they see the results that you're getting, they're more apt to want to help you continue those results. So sometimes it's, you got to be on the ground, you know, with the people that you're helping, with the people, the local people that you see every day. Don't count these people out because even though they may only be able to give $5 or $10, that's $5 or $10 towards your goal. So you have grants, you have individuals. Then you can look at something like banks. Local community banks have community budgets. A lot of them do community funding. And so you can simply go to their website, and a lot of times it will list out what the eligibility requirements are to receive their grant. Again, do the same thing. Research. If their eligibility aligns with what your organization is doing, apply. And a lot of times the local banks, their fundings run on a 30 to 45-day cycle. So you're getting funding a lot faster than if you were to apply for a major grant. So that's a way to get funding just a little bit faster from an actual institution. And then from that, you build that relationship with that bank so that every time that community funding grant comes available, you're on their list already. You're already someone that they know. And so they are more willing to look at you again, especially if they've already funded you and they've seen results from the funding that they've given. So just to recap, we have grants, we have the individual, and we have local banks. And then so we also have other things that you can do. You can reach out to local donors, other organizations. You know, a lot of times they'll list who their donors are. Find organizations that are similar to you and see who's on their donor list. See how much information you can get from them. Mail them out a letter, just letting them know you're here and what you do. Make that first contact with them because if they're donating over here and you're doing something similar or something of interest of them, they may also donate to you as well. So finding people that already give is also essential because you don't have to convince them to give. They already give. They know the benefit of giving. They know that what their results can be from giving. So sometimes looking at what they're doing and then seeing how your organization fits with them will help you get that funding as well. I just want to list them again for everyone. You have grants, you have your local bank, you have individuals, and then you have donors. And that's not the only ones, but those are the major ways to get funding for your organization. Each one comes at different times, but it's important, again, going back to your board, that if your board understands what type of funding you need, they'll also put in place a strategy to get that funding. So if they know they need $50,000, they're going to be looking into how they can get that, whether it's through donations, whether it's through a grant or local funding. So that's how the board kind of comes down with funding as well. So those are like the key essentials for organizations when it comes to funding. And there's different other ways you can do it. You know, we've all seen the kids out, you know, with the car washes or the garage sales and different things like that. Those definitely work in your favor. My only advice I would give to organizations is to do what's within your means at that moment. And what I mean by that is, you know, if your organization is made up of elderly or that's your clientele, you don't necessarily want to have them out doing a car wash. You know, that can be a little bit, you know, so be mindful of what it is that, you know, what your funding tactics are, because you want to make sure that you're not reaching so high that it's not obtainable with the staff or the current position that you're in. So we want to take those baby steps to be able to build up to getting that $100,000 grant. So that's my advice on funding.
All right. That's some great advice. And I didn't even know that. I didn't know that about the community bank. So that was really good information there.
Oh, yeah. So, they do it every quarter. They give money out
wow.
every quarter.
Okay. Well, to summarize, the three essential parts of a tax-exempt nonprofit, you have board members, volunteers, yes. and funding. So how do these three essential parts operate together within the organization?
Again, starting with board members, they are the core. They are the ones that are creating the strategic plans for the organization, setting the direction and the course in which we're going to go in. And so with the board members doing that, it makes the volunteers' job easier. One thing I always say is that if your board members are indecisive, can't make decisions, have no direction, then guess what? Your volunteers won't either. And what does that do? Again, we go to the trickle-down effect. If the board members can't get it together and work out, great, then the volunteers are not going to have direction. They're not going to know what to do. And if the volunteers don't know what to do, then it makes it harder for the clients or the community that they're serving to get the services that they need. How does that trickle down to funding? Again, if the board members are not in agreement on what they're doing, then the volunteers can't do what they do, which is, you know, do the work in the community. And so no one's really going to fund someone that's not getting results. No one wants to invest their money where there's no results that are going to be yielded, where there's no clear-cut strategy that's going to get them from point A to point B. So when you tie it all together, board members, volunteers, and fundings being the most essential parts of a tax exemption organization is really how the organization is able to succeed. They all tie into each other. Board members being the core, volunteers being those that are doing the work out in the community. Those are the people that people actually see doing work. And then the funding comes because people see the work being done, because people can see that the planning was done and outlined and that it's being supervised the way it needs to be, that the organization is constantly assessing itself to improve it and make it better, that the organization is doing development within itself to make sure that each project that they embark on will get the correct amount of work done. So when you look at it all together, if one of those three things are not working properly, the organization will essentially not succeed at the rate that it could. I'm not going to say it won't succeed, but it'll take longer. We all know if the funding's not there, sometimes it takes longer to kind of level up. We all know if the volunteers are not there, then it's harder to get the work done in the community that you need. We all know if the board members are not there, then there is no core to the organization. There's no direction. There's no planning. There's no, you know, no focus. So that's why these, all three of these are essential to a nonprofit organization, and that's how, if they operate together, an organization can be run very smoothly.
All right. Well, Elizabeth, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listening audience regarding your topic today?
My final thoughts, if you're looking to start a nonprofit organization, I say do the research first. Make sure that your organization idea, make sure that there's a need, make sure that what it is you're getting ready to do, that there's clientele for it, that there is room for it, because we do have a lot of nonprofit organizations. And, you know, and if you're not sure about it, consider working underneath another organization first, seeing how they operate, seeing what they're doing, and really figuring out, is this really your passion? Another thing that I will say to nonprofit organizations is once you get your tax-exempt status and you're looking for funding, go right out, right away. See what you're eligible for. Go out and see what the criteria is so that you know what your organization needs to be planning for. You may not get that funding in the first year, but that second year you could if you do the right planning. And as far as getting volunteers for your organization, once you know the direction your organization wants to go in, it'll always be in the forefront of your mind. So I would just say, you know, if you're looking to start an organization, definitely do it. Do the research first. Get everything in line that you want to do, and then go forth and do it.
All right. Well, Elizabeth, before we bring this interview to a close, tell our listening audience what impressed you the most about Atlanta's People You Need to Know business guide.
Wow, just the people. Oh, the amazing women that contribute to this. I love the fact that you guys go out and you support women in what they're doing, that you guys take the time to sit with them and allow them to speak on why they do what they do, why this is important to them, and why they feel like their business at that time is something that people need to know about. I know for myself, just with my passion for nonprofits, I find a lot of people don't know a lot about nonprofits. So just your magazine alone is giving me a platform to be able to help educate people as far as how nonprofits can operate and how they can be successful. And that's huge to me. That is awesome.
Oh, most definitely. When I heard you speak at that Black Expo event, I said, I need her on my radio show because she's very knowledgeable and you come across very caring and you're passionate about what you do and you make it simple.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I definitely want to make it so that people understand it. I know a lot of people hear that quote unquote corporate jargon and it's like, that's too over my head. My goal is to have you understand what you're doing. My goal is to make sure when you walk away from working with me, you know how to operate your nonprofit inside and out. You know it better than anyone else because we've sat down and done the work. And I'm not just telling you what to do, but I'm teaching you. I'm teaching you how to do it so that you can do it forever.
And finally, how can our listeners connect with you?
They can connect with me on my website, www.youarelife.consulting. I'm also on Facebook at You Are Life and on Instagram at youarelife.consulting.
Well, Ms. Elizabeth Peeble, CEO of You Are Life, thank you for spending some of your most precious and valuable time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. You've been listening to Spark Plug Radio, the radio station that shines the spotlight on Metro Atlanta women business owners. To listen to even more people you need to know, just Google Spark Plug Radio and be sure to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at PYNTK. If you'd like for me to speak at your conference, meeting, or event, please email your request to sparkplugpeople@gmail.com. I want to take a moment to thank our executive producer, Ms. Jacqueline Benjamin Thomas, for doing another phenomenal job behind the scenes. So until next time, this is Spark Plug, America's ambassador for women business owners, reminding you that you are the person who has to decide whether you'll do it or toss it aside. You are the person who makes up your mind, whether you'll lead or linger behind, whether you'll try for a goal that is far or be content to stay where you are. Take it or leave it, there's something to do. Just think it over. It's all up to you. Thanks again for tuning in, and be sure to tell your friends about Spark Plug Radio.